the Ion Basketball Podcast, the Pick and Troll Podcast. I'm your host, Zach Harper. I have back from the dead, Matt Moore, senior NBA blogger. Matt, how's it going?
Hack, wheeze, cough. You know, I hate the holidays. I hate people. I hate my family. I hate the holidays.
Yeah, that's what the holidays are for, to remind you of that.
You know, I live in my little hermitage blogging bubble, and it's nice and safe and comforting. And then either I go to places for the holidays, or people come here, and I get sick over and over and over again, and I hate it, because, like, I don't sleep, and I work all the time, and that's how I live my life, and I'm okay with that. And then, like, if you introduce any sort of illness, I just completely go to pieces. I'm such a wimp. I just can't do anything. So I'm hopped up on a lot of cold medicine today, and looking forward to saying some things that probably aren't appropriate on this podcast.
That's, I'm actually really excited to hear that. I've never really talked to Peyote Matt before, so this will be fun.
You know it's also not appropriate?
Apparently, fouling Isaiah Thomas.
Fouling Isaiah Thomas is not appropriate, according to the NBA.
No, I wanted to talk to you about this because it was a hard foul. And
Charlie Villanueva.
Yeah, Charlie Villanueva, Pistons-Kings game, right before halftime. Isaiah drives a lane. Charlie hits him with a hard foul. And I'm not one of those guys that's like, oh, in the old day, this wouldn't have been called, blah, blah, blah. You know, the league has changed. There was a brawl in a arena that caused a riot. Like, the league has changed, and I accept that. But with flagrant fouls, it seems so... It still seems so sensitive or so... I don't know. They're too careful about it, and I like that you now can review flagrant fouls immediately. The refs can go and make sure they did it. But they went, checked the tape, and ejected Charlie for that play. I mean, Isaiah Thomas popped right up and, like, got in his face and, like, shoved his arm away when someone put their arm up and didn't get a technical. Usually you see that guy get a technical. But they just ejected Charlie right away, and I didn't think it was that bad. I thought it was more of a Charlie has a foot on Isaiah Thomas, and that's why it looked bad.
Yeah, and well, I think also honestly it looked bad. That's honestly, okay, so there's two kinds of flagrant fouls, and this is where I think fans get confused.
Yes.
Because it doesn't have to be intentional.
Right.
People miss that a lot.
It can just be reckless.
It's reckless. It's the Andrew Bynum foul to me, is always what it comes. Bynum in his younger days, not the Brea one. That was malicious.
Right.
But in his younger days, Bynum would foul people in violent ways simply because he wouldn't take enough care to try and avoid hurting them.
Right.
Right. And you do have an obligation to try and not hurt a fellow player.
Sure.
This is not football, you know? Like, if everyone tried to hurt one another, it would be, like, as much as this is a non-contact sport, it would be ugly.
Oh, yeah.
You know? So you can have a flagrant where you're just not trying hard enough to avoid, or it can be reckless. But this is one where I honestly think it's mostly a fact that Villanueva, even though he's got a foot on him, Villanueva doesn't jump high enough to try and block it. Like, he's just lazy.
Yeah.
You know? And so then it's like, okay, well, if he's not going to get up there to block it, or if he doesn't think he can get up there to block it, you know, you've got to be able to foul him without necessarily while trying to make a play on the ball. Because if he just, like, you know, in that situation, because he's moving so fast, if he tries to wrap him up, he's going to clothesline him.
Yeah, exactly.
Or he's going to spear him, you know. And with little Isaiah, that's going to hurt him much, much, much worse. Like, this is one. The thing is, if you look at this foul, and look at the Dwight Howard foul on Kenneth Faried, they're kind of similar.
Sure.
But I would say that Howard made even less of an effort, and Howard pretty clearly was like, you know what, screw it, I'm just going to hit you in the face. Versus Villanueva, it was like, I'm going to put my hand here, and if I get the ball, great. If I hit him in the arms, okay.
Yeah, they do look similar, and it does, to me, look like he is kind of making a play on the ball, where I still didn't think it was a flagrant. If they gave him a flagrant one, I wouldn't have a big problem with it. But the fact that he just got straight ejected from the game, I thought, well, that just seems severe. And I wonder if that was strictly a case of, you know, getting him out of here now will definitely avoid, you know, a potential incident later in the game. And then I wonder, is that okay? Is that enough reason for a flagrant two in an ejection for a guy?
I think it's mostly everyone hates Charlie Villanueva.
Well, that's, I mean, he is a cancer to his team and his league.
Shout out to KG.
Yeah. I'll always back KG on that.
No. I think it's, to me, it looked like it was a half-hearted effort to make a play on the ball that wound up with him kind of hitting him in the face a little bit.
Is it something where, I mean, there's the flagrant one, flagrant two system, the right system to have. We just maybe need more clarity. I mean, you could argue you need more clarity in a lot of the rules, so it's not so ambiguous, but is the amount of interpretation that is allowed, is it a good thing? Do you have a problem with most flagrant fouls that are called, or do you think that they're pretty much right on?
I'm hyper-protective of the players. After I read The Punch by John Feinstein,
yeah,
about Rajon Jamic getting punched by Kermit Washington, now it's a fight, so that's entirely different.
Yeah.
But it changed the way I look at the physical dynamics of the game, like trying to factor in how big, how fast, how strong these guys are. I'm always looking to protect guys. But I will say this. I have an idea. Here's a suggestion for you. We have flagrant ones. We have flagrant twos. And then we have something called a dumbass foul.
Okay.
Okay. And if it's just like, what are you doing? Seriously? What are you doing? And it's, you have to miss a quarter of play, and the other team gets three foul shots, but you're not ejected from the game.
Yeah, I'd be fine with that. I feel like, I don't know, a quarter of play might be severe.
How about a half quarter? Let's do six minutes.
That's where it's something where I wonder if it has to, like, if there has to be like a 2-point conversion chart, like in the NFL, where the ref can just look at the chart and be like, all right, it happened at this moment in the game, so he is out for this long. Like, if it's in the first half, then you can say, all right, he's back at halftime. Or
right,
if it happens in the second half, then maybe it's like, oh, the next 6 minutes you're out, or something like that.
But regardless, we can do it that way. That way you just, like, you miss some part of the game. It's a cool-off period for everybody. And then, you know, and that's fine. And that way it's more severe. And because, like, what you're really trying to do in this situation is you're like, don't be lazy. If you're going to foul, do not be lazy.
Right. And that was the thing, is that it was definitely a lazy foul. It wasn't dangerous, malicious, like Bynum, you know, catapulting J.J. Barea.
Right. If he'd thrown him down, I
yeah,
would have no problem with it. But as long
yeah,
as he, like, if he, all he basically did was, instead of going up with his arms, he went forward.
Yeah, and it wasn't like a swiping motion or anything like that, you know. And you know, Kings announcers are going to protect their guy, but, you know, I think Grant Napier was like, oh, there's no place for that. And I just didn't think it was that bad.
Yeah, I mean, I'm watching it now, and it's just like, you know, he makes a little extension with the arm. And I think that's what got him. Was he made the extension with the arm. The big thing is, like, you can't throw a guy down because you're risking concussion.
Sure.
I think that's the NBA's big concern.
I was amazed when you see DeMarcus Cousins come charging in on the play, and I was like, oh boy, here we go. And,
so exciting.
And he kept the peace. Yeah, he went in there and just, like, removed, like, he wasn't a hothead about it, and that's where I started thinking, like, wow, this Cousins thing has gone to the complete opposite end of where I was last year with him. Like, now I'm expecting everything he does to be bad.
You realize that was just Cousins being like, no, if anybody's starting to fight here.
Yeah. No, Isaiah, this is my fight. If there's going to be a fight, it's on my terms.
He's probably actually going after Villanueva. Hey.
Yeah.
Anybody starting to fight with Isaiah Thomas?
Yeah, exactly. If anyone's going to fight a teammate of mine, it's me.
It's me.
Now, Isaiah, get back in my pocket.
Have you been surprised that Villanueva has actually been competent this year?
That was the thing. I can't remember who the writer was. It was a Detroit writer. It wasn't Vince. It was somebody else. And who tweeted, like, someone said, oh, you know, get Villanueva's bum ass out of there. And he said, what? The guy with the second best PER on the team. And I was like, what? How is that possible?
19.8, baby.
Yeah. Yeah, he's been extremely competent.
Shooting 57% from the field. He
yeah,
still can't get minutes. But
yeah, I mean, it's almost like this is going to be taken way out of context, but it's almost like he's their Jimmer Fredette, and he's getting limited minutes, but he's producing in those minutes, you know?
I'd like to congratulate you for being the first person to ever compare Charlie Villanueva to Jimmer Fredette in the history of civilization.
You are not helping my point at all.
I don't mean going backwards. I mean going forwards as well. This will never be compared. Those two players will never be compared throughout the history of time.
But he is. He's getting limited minutes, but he's producing when he's out there.
Yeah, maybe. And, you know, I got to credit Frank for not just giving up on him, for being like, no, you're playing well. It's okay. Go on.
Jonas Jerebko, on the other hand, he's completely given up on.
Yeah, they need to trade him, though, because I love Jonas. I think Jonas is...
Yeah, he's good.
He is... I think he's, like, seventh man on a championship team good.
Yeah, like, I keep thinking... I mean, I would
swap out Udonis Haslam for Jonas Jerebko right now.
Yeah. They have Marion and Crowder, but I would love Jonas on, like, you know, on the Mavs, or even with Kawhi and Steven Jackson on the Spurs. Like, he seems like he'd be perfect on the Spurs. I mean, he's a nice, nice role player. He's like,
he'd be great on Memphis. He's struggling shooting, so he'd be a great role there.
Right? He'd fit right in.
That game was depressing yesterday.
It wasn't great.
No, it was not. It was depressing.
You know who's depressed right now?
Who?
The city of Los Angeles.
Oh, man.
The mighty Clippers have fallen. I mean, they still have the best record in the league, I believe, but the win streak is over. They cannot win in 2013.
I did not think Denver was going to win that game. I was mad because I didn't get to go because I was ill yesterday. I was all excited about it. I was going to do a whole big feature for CBS on it. And no. I did watch the game, and, you know, Denver just, I mean, the Clippers eventually were going to have a night like that.
Yeah.
It was coming. And I guess on the road versus the Nuggets.
First time all year they've shot under 40% in a game.
In the altitude.
Yeah.
And Denver defense has been superb. They're at 98 defensive efficiency for the last week and a half.
That's not bad.
That's pretty good. Yeah. So they're cranking. They played really well, and, you know, Iguodala, and especially that Ty Lawson. That was crazy. And of course, I have to deal this morning with, doesn't this mean that Ty Lawson shouldn't start?
Oh my god, this is the guy everyone was fighting for to get a contract extension. Yes.
Yeah.
Like saying this guy deserves Rondo money and stuff like that. I mean, I believe those were the arguments being made.
Yep.
2 months ago.
Yep. He had a rough start to the season, you know, and he's got a strained Achilles right now. He's worn down. Andre Miller played exceptionally well because, you know, Andre Miller will always do the opposite of what you're expecting.
Yeah.
That's what I'm learning covering this Nuggets team.
And he did a really good job defending Chris Paul when he was on him.
Yep. Chris is human. He's
barely.
He's barely human.
Barely.
He's like a sliver, just like 2% human.
Let's not get out of control here. He is barely a human.
It's impressive, and to me, it's like, you know, it's one of those games that I'm pretty sure the Clippers are going to bounce back. Like, I was looking at their win streak, and they lost three in a row, and then went on the win streak. That's what I think was funny. So you can see them losing a couple. The big one's Friday versus LA.
And, well, I mean, I'm really looking forward to the matchup with the Warriors.
Yeah, everyone's really excited about that one. And I don't know, I guess that's one where I just kind of feel like it just kind of depends on if the Clippers are hitting or not.
Sure.
But, I don't know, I haven't softened on the Warriors at all. I'm just kind of like, you know, I guess I kind of understand, you know, the Warriors kind of, they've raised what I consider them to be, but they're not, I don't think the Warriors have a whole lot of, I think they're right about their ceiling.
Yeah.
You know.
Before we move on to the Lakers also losing, let's talk about JaVale McGee.
Three-point god, JaVale McGee.
I mean, he is 100% on the season. That's a fact.
He's perfect for 2013, too.
He is. He is.
He's averaging one three-pointer per game in 2013.
Yeah, he's the all-time leading three-point shooter in this year. I mean, it was such a funny moment because as he's about to get the ball, the announcers got really excited for this to happen, and then he hits the three, Twitter blows up, he does the he's cooking dance, is that what it is?
Yeah, Denver Post reporter Ben Hockman reported on Twitter that he said he has been told it's the cooking dance, so he's like mixing something up to cook it on the fire.
Yeah, I mean it's not really how you cook, but if I was going to imagine JaVale McGee cooking, he would, like, mix up batter and then throw it on a grill.
Let JaVale cook, man.
Let JaVale cook. He was good last night. He was really good.
17 minutes, he still doesn't get, he, you know. It's weird how he doesn't get minutes.
Part of that is Carl being careful with him, but is another part of that maybe the asthma?
I thought it was, but I've been informed by people, about to drop another one of those phrases, people, so just prepare yourselves. People with knowledge of the situation have informed me that there's no restriction on his minutes according to doctors, that there is no concern for him.
Huh.
That's something to keep an eye on, that's something that he's going to struggle with, but there is no physical restriction on his activity.
It kind of reminds me of the J.R. Smith situation where, which J.R. Smith actually retweeted someone basically saying like, oh, it's amazing how you can play when the coach and team and city believe in you. Like someone tweeted that to J.R. Smith. He retweeted it. I think Benjamin Hockman had it like put in a little post today, like just a little blog post. Kind of wondering if J.R. is taking a shot at Denver or if he's accepting people taking shots at Denver.
He and Carl, you know,
they've had their times.
They've had their times. It's, you know, J.R. Smith is always going to blame other people for the problems that he's had. That's right. The kind of player he is.
Right.
And the kind of person he is. So. Let's stop there before my drug-addled mind gets me in more trouble.
Let's move on to the Lakers.
Yeah, well, I did want to go just real quick though. It's one where their best lineups. Like, here's the bizarre part: so JaVale's got 11 points, 7 rebounds, 3 assists. Right, great night. Shot 50%. Their best lineups overall last night. All like 4 of them I looked at were all with Kufo still.
Yeah, Kufo it's odd. It's like he's never out there, but he's always playing solid.
Here's what's interesting though. I looked at it, and actually what Carl went to a lot last night, and I noticed his end game, and then the data kind of confirmed it. A lot of success.
I'll edit that out. Don't worry.
Yeah, a lot of success running the two big lineups out. So running JaVale and Kufos together, which it's one game, but that's the guy that got me now being like, I want to keep an eye out for how the Clippers do against two true big lineups going forward.
Yeah.
Because that could be interesting. Because there's a bunch of those in the West. There's the Grizzlies, the Lakers, and a few others. So,
we've talked about this before, but I watch Kenneth Fareed play, and he's a very, very good role player. And I just keep thinking, like, in 2 years when it's contract extension time, I don't know that there's any scenario in which I'll think like, oh my God, that is the correct contract for him. No matter if it could be way too low, it could be way too high, but I feel like they will never be just right.
I mean, I think he's going to get 10-40. I think is probably what he'll get, or yeah. 4-40.
Yeah.
You know, I think he'll probably get 4-40, or he might get 4-44. Depending, but I mean, I think Denver probably knows his limitations. I think that they just realized like he's their best option to win.
Sure.
Like with Denver, it's always been they're willing to deal with the bad to get the good, and they recognize how young he is.
Yeah,
and he's not super young, but he's young enough. And so, I mean, yeah, I think it's gonna be a big problem. I continue to think that there is nobody on Denver that's untouchable.
Right.
Just because Denver, I think Denver more than any other team is willing. Here's the best thing I think about Denver. As far as their approach, there are teams that get so caught up in their own talent that they make stupid decisions. Like, oh no, we wouldn't trade that guy. We'd love that guy. Like, if the Sixers had like a deal to get like a major upgrade, and we're like, oh, but we can't. We're not trading Thaddeus Young.
Right.
It's like, well, no. Like, if you're getting a star, give Thaddeus Young. Like, don't hold out for Thaddeus Young. Like, even the Clippers did this with like Eric Bledsoe. Like, we're not giving you Eric Bledsoe though. And yeah, it worked out great for them. But still, like, they could have given up Eric Bledsoe on that deal, and it would have been fine.
Well, yeah, it's worked out great for them now.
Right. If that had been the sticking point for them not getting Chris Paul.
Yeah, that would have been insane.
Yeah, you know. So, that's the thing with Denver. I think if there's a deal that comes across and they're like, the team really wants Fareed, it's a player that Denver thinks is going to be a building block for them, a core foundation star, they'll do it.
Yeah. So. Speaking of stars...
Let's talk about some stars in L.A.
The Los Angeles Lakers, they lose by 4 to the Philadelphia 76ers. Powell and Dwight combined to go 3 of 19 from the field.
That doesn't sound very high, Zach.
It's what I like to call a stucky. Pulled a stucky.
That's mean.
I still can't get over the point that he get over the idea that he was shooting like 4% a week into the season. That's incredible.
That's just me.
They weren't good, but I don't know. I felt like they could have easily won that game even playing as poorly as they did. And you know, they missed 11 free throws.
If somebody had gotten back on Drew Holiday, maybe.
That's a problem. And
Kobe Bryant had taken a spinning, whirling dervish three-pointer for no apparent reason.
And it's weird because, you know, this has all been said before, but Kobe is the main reason they stay in that game. He's 14 of 29, had 36 points, got to the free throw line 10 times. He had a really good scoring night. But key moments in the game, he just blew it. Just completely blew it. And so you start, I mean, those are the moments where you start thinking like, oh, this was Kobe's fault. But then you look at the numbers and you're like, oh, he's really the only one that did anything on offense. And it's just that weird conundrum again of he can't take you the entire way. He needs some help. And if he's forced to take you up into the end of the game, he's probably too tired to make the correct decisions down the stretch on both sides of the ball.
I did like Stu Lance, the color commentator for the Lakers, actually said when he nailed that three that kind of put, I think he got to five.
Yeah.
He hit that three, and Stu Lance said, it went in. That was not a good shot. I didn't like that shot. Like, it's so weird because their color commentator is so good, and their play-by-play announcer is so terrible.
Right.
But here's some fun. So going into the game yesterday, you could say the Lakers have won 6 of 7. That's great. And now you're able to say, ooh, the Lakers have lost 2 of their last 3.
Sure.
So that's fun with streaks.
And they had 25 fast break points.
Yeah.
They just couldn't do anything.
Kobe said they're old, though.
Yeah, they couldn't.
Kobe's been saying they're old.
Yeah. They just could not do absolutely anything in the half court if it wasn't Kobe bailing them out.
Drew Holiday's low. I mean, how far ahead is he in most improved player, you think?
I mean, he's probably – it's such a weird award, and by weird I mean horribly voted on. He's probably way ahead of everyone. I still think Blake Griffin's the most improved right now. I know that, you know, the raw numbers don't show it, but the way he's improved, you know, I wrote about it, I think, a week ago. He is so much better than what he was last year at all the small things he needed to improve at. He would be my pick, but Drew Holiday's up there.
Yep. I'm going to force Corey Brewer in this conversation. I'm just letting you know. As the year goes on, I'm going to just take a wedge and force Corey Brewer in this conversation.
Sure. I mean, Corey Brewer deserves most improved. You know, it's always supposed to be a year-by-year basis, but there are some guys that get awards, like, you know, Coach of the Year or it was like the whole Jerry Sloan thing. Like, everyone was like, oh, how has this guy not gotten Coach of the Year yet? He needs to get Coach of the Year because of what he's done in the past. And Corey Brewer is going to be one of the most improved player guys where you're like, this guy's gotten so much better over the last 4 years, he should win the award.
I would think that, but no, I don't think that at all. I'll tell you, because here's what's going to be awesome about me trying to force Corey Brewer into this conversation. Zero, absolutely no one agrees. And I'm not talking just like, I think if I was to say, I'm going to probably ask Brewer about it tomorrow, and he's going to have me be like, what? Like, George Karl would not agree with me on this. The fans do not agree with me on this. Like, no one agrees with me. I'm like the only one being like, he's really a lot better.
It's been like, it has been incremental improvements, though, with him. You know, like, it started slow. Like, he learned how to dribble, which was not something he could do when he first came into the league. He learned how to maximize his time on the court. Then he learned how to shoot better. I mean, it was all like very small things that have all come together now to where he's a very good guy off the bench.
And like the data doesn't back it up at all.
Yeah.
Like whatsoever. He's got 15.4 PER, which is not nearly like as high as his career.
Right.
Like, you know, he is shooting better, but he's not even shooting as well as he did the year in Dallas when he played 13 games. Like, he's got a true shooting percentage of 51%. Like, he's not shooting great.
Yeah.
But I just, for me, like, what he's given that team, they're just better when he's on the floor, especially defensively. Like, defensively is my thing, is he is so, so, I was trying to explain this to, I was talking to the play-by-play guy for the Nuggets the other day, and we were talking about how Chris Marlowe, and we were talking about, he was saying, he's like, yeah, he's like, but Corey reaches so much. I was like, yeah, but so does Tony Allen.
Right.
Like, Tony reaches, and when you go, and when you go past him, he does the back reach, where he tries to get the ball out from behind you.
Yeah.
And he's starting to get that, and the more he gets that, the harder it's going to be, because Tony Allen causes chaos with that. Like, I've seen Tony Allen literally fake the steal just so he's in better position to make the back steal.
Whereas Monte Ellis just stands there, tries the back steal half-heartedly, and then just leaks out on the fast break.
Just leaks out. That's actually my favorite thing about Brewer, is that he is, in my opinion, the best leak-out player in the NBA.
He is. It is unbelievable how he uses that to his advantage.
Well, it's like he doesn't – he's never giving up on defense. That's what I love about it, is like he's finishing the play.
Yeah.
He's just – as soon as that ball is in the air and he can see that it's going towards any of his guys, he is in a dead-on sprint.
He has one of the best without-the-ball first steps in the league.
Yep.
I mean, he just he gets going in the other direction so well.
And then, you know, and it's been great because Andre Miller's kind of, like, realized that, and he started to realize that. And Andre Iguodala's kind of done it, too. Ty Lawson still has some trouble with it. Ty Lawson still has kind of some trouble finding him in transition, which is something else that they're going to have to fix. So, back to the Lakers, though. I mean, I think they're okay. Like, I wrote about how they're still struggling with effort, and to me, that's still, like, a big problem with them, is they defensively, they don't give consistent effort. And it's a hard thing to do in this league during the regular season.
Yeah, the coverage and the fans and the coverage of this team have really started. I mean, they are really zeroing in on this Dwight Howard back issue of he is not okay, you know, physically, and this is why, you know, it's been talked about, but it really seems to be ramping up now. And it makes me wonder, you know, how do you deal with that? Can you just play him a lot fewer minutes and hope you get by with Powett Center? Because Powett Center's been pretty good.
I mean, he's not missing games.
Right.
You know, so it's one where I don't think you can ever argue, like, I mean, I wouldn't mind closing games without Dwight, but Dwight would mind it, and you have to keep Dwight happy. So it's like an impossible position.
And you do need him defensively at end of games.
Yeah.
Whether he's playing good defense or not, like, you need the threat there.
He's never, I don't know, the big thing is, and I don't know, there's a lot of questions here about, we gotta wait for 2 years. 2 years is pretty much how long it's gonna take. We're gonna have to check back like a year and a half later. But this is gonna be a huge thing going forward of exactly how much of an impact was Stan Van Gundy.
Sure.
Because, like, I think one of the problems that Lakers fans are having right now is even with Antoine Jameson, even with Jody Meeks, and even with, you know, Steve, you know, when Steve Blake gets back, or whoever, Jordan Hill. I think people struggle with this idea of looking and being like, well, we have to have more talent than the Magic, right? I'm not necessarily sure that's true, though, defensively. Like, Hedo Turkoglu in 2009 was really good defensively. Rashard Lewis was really good defensively. Like,
the thing
it makes me nuts how people really do not understand how good the 2008 through 2010 Magic were.
Right, but those guys weren't good individually, defensively. They bought into a great system.
They did what they were asked to do.
Yeah, and that's the difference. It's like, talent-wise, this Laker team should be a lot better defensively, and probably is, just on athletic talent alone. But they don't have the system, and they don't have guys buying into whatever system they have.
And based off of what I've seen, that's kind of the impact, is you've got, like, with the Magic, it was, they were able to do just enough to where Dwight didn't have to do everything to cover up defensively.
Right.
Versus now he has to, and he's not physically able to.
Yeah, and that Stan Van Gundy system just, it tricked you into taking long jumpers so often. And part of that is the threat of Dwight, but it really was just the smoke and mirrors thing of, hey, there's a shot over there. Well, you should probably go take that now. And it was never a good shot. And it's just something that makes me a little annoyed that the whole Dwight Mayer had to happen, because they really are just so perfect for each other. I mean, I think Eddie Rivera of Magic Basketball has talked about this a lot, where that system with Dwight, it was just a perfect marriage.
And when he comes back to coach, like, he's going to have, like, you know, if he doesn't have that kind of defensive presence, if the team struggles, people are going to, you know, point to it being all Dwight. And it's like, well, they had to work together.
Right.
You know? That's why you don't screw up a good thing. That's, you know, that's something that Dwight definitely does not know. And I don't think any of the players in the NBA right now know that. Like, if you have something that's working, don't screw it up.
Right.
You know? I mean, that was the thing with like, Malone and Stockton. They didn't win a title, but those are legendary names in the NBA. I mean, those are legendary names in the NBA because they were very good, but they also never screwed up a good thing.
Yeah, they just they embraced it and they let it happen, and they rode it for, you know, 18 years together, however long they were together.
And Karl Malone, like, still sticks up for his coach.
Yeah.
You know? And I mean, maybe, you know, and maybe it's not fair to compare because a lot of these guys didn't have that kind of a coach. Because a lot of Lakers fans are doing grumble, Mike D'Antoni or whatever. And, you know, Van Gundy's obviously had, like, a history of problems. But that's one of the things, is there's this perception. Like, I hate the perception because, like, fans, and not all fans, some fans, dumb fans, and players have the same perception of Stan Van Gundy, the you know, the master of panic and all this stuff. And, like, every intelligent kind of person that really pays a lot of attention, and there are some analysts that are this way too, they're like, look, Stan Van Gundy's a really great coach. I said this a lot during the Dwight mayor, was, you know, Dwight was not good defensively when he was younger. No one's good defensively when they're younger, but he really had a lot of trouble. And Van Gundy, I wrote posts about it for Fan House back when Fan House was a thing.
God, about how that was Gundy, like,
ancient history.
Really long time ago.
That's the Cretaceous blogging period.
Right.
You know, when dinosaurs walked the earth, you know. Juwan Howard was only like 39. It was a long time ago. But I wrote about how there was conflict. Like, there was these, there were not conflict even, but there were these, I did blog posts about Van Gundy telling the media openly, Dwight has to get better on defense. He's got to be a better defender and a better rebounder.
Yeah.
And he did. This kills me because, like, J.J. Redick is the kind of the non-star version of this, where J.J. Redick came in as the best shooter in ACC history.
Right.
And everyone's like, why isn't he playing? And Van Gundy said, look, it's not that I don't like J.J. I love J.J. I love his work ethic. He's not going to play until he learns defense. And J.J. Redick, to his credit, was, like, annoyed early on, but finally was like, you know what? I'm just going to do the work.
Yeah.
I'm going to trust that if I do the work, I'm going to get time. And he did.
Yeah. And he's had,
he's like a phenomenal player because he's a shooter that you can trust to play defensively. And there's like four of those in the league.
Right. And he's like, I mean, it's incredible how this is going to be a weird comparison, and I don't mean it directly.
Oh, excited for this one.
One-on-one. But he's kind of become a little bit like a light version of Aaron Aflalo, whereas he will play defense for you willingly, and he will really hurt teams from the perimeter. Like, he's that kind of a role player.
Yeah, he can shoot.
Yeah.
His follow apparently cannot shoot. By the way, oh, I want to real quick before we go back to the Lakers. Can I get your thoughts on Nikola Vucevic?
Oh my god. This.
I'm sorry. I just want to apologize to you in person.
No, it's no,
very
it's my.
Sorry for the conversation that we began.
It's my fault because I shouldn't have said anything. He had a fantastic game the other night. He had 20 points and 29 rebounds. And you know what this reminded me of? I thought about it, and it reminded me of when Brandon Jennings scored 55 points. It was people are like, oh, you're going to discount a guy that just broke Shaq's record? What the hell does that even mean? He had a single-game record, which is fantastic. Awesome game.
Team.
What?
For one team.
For one team, yeah. Not an all-time thing. This is a one-team record, a team that's been around since 1989. I mean,
Kevin Love's like, cool story, bro.
Yeah, exactly. Like, you know, Charles Oakley had 36 rebounds in a game or something like that. It happens. It doesn't happen very often, but stuff like this happens.
Are you saying Charles Oakley's not a good player? Should I go tell Charles that you just said he's not a good player?
Yeah, hold on. Let me get in my bomb shelter real quick, and then you can go tell him. But, I mean, Vucevic had a really good game, and you mentioned on Twitter that you know, it was dumb of the Sixers to let him go in favor of Spencer Hawes. And I thought about it, and I thought, I get it. I'm not a Spencer Hawes fan. I never have been. I probably never will be. But they're basically not the same type of player, but the same effectiveness this year. And if you want more of a veteran guy on the team doing the same amount of effective play, then I get going with Haas over Vucevic. Now, if you factor in their contract, it seems like a dumb thing to me, because Vucevic is even if he gives you a 15.5 PER or whatever, like, that's a fantastic contract to get that from. And so you factor in the contract and age. He's only 2 years younger than Haas. I mean, it's not like this huge age disparity. So I get why they would take Haas over Vucevic. I just don't think it's a ridiculous thing. And then Orlando fans, because, you know, every time one good thing happens, like, they start out 2-1. Oh my God, see, we haters gonna hate. We're better than you guys thought we would be in the preseason. And then Vucevic has a big game and it's like, oh, are you kidding me? He's averaging a double-double on the year. That's fantastic. It doesn't mean that our conversation wasn't valid. It's okay to question stuff like that. But no, he has a 29 rebounding game and all of a sudden this is what he does.
I tell you this, I watched him, I focused in on games, I went back and watched like video that we have available to us of him last year in the scant seconds that Doug Collins allowed him to play.
Yeah.
And I always really liked it. He's a tough physical guy.
Yeah.
Spencer Haas is a big that will foul people if you ask him to.
Sure.
And I say this, like, if you want to have the one game effect, Spencer Haas is a huge reason they won that game last night.
Oh, sure. He was huge off the bench. Blocking shots, passing, hitting shots. He was great.
Yeah, he's got that mid-range shot, which I think that's what Collins really likes. Is he's got the mid, he wants mid-range jump shots.
Yeah.
He's the only coach in the league that wants them.
And that's why stylistically it makes sense. And it's not like they really decided between the two. He was a part of a package for Andrew Bynum, you know?
Yeah, I get that. I guess just for me, it's like, I feel like if he had gotten more minutes, they would have played better last year, and then maybe it could have been Haas sent. You're right, it's a whole hypothetical thing. But, you know, he couldn't have been because he was a free agent, so that's null and void. So you're right there. I just really don't like Spencer Haas, Zach.
I'm with you.
He's going to lose them a playoff series, and it's going to make me nuts, because I'm going to be like, why are you doing? And it's not about his political beliefs. I don't care. It's not that, I like guys that are role players that hustle, I try not to focus on one thing. If he was a great rebounder and a great mid-range shooter and had a great hook shot and a great defender, then I would forgive the KG stuff last year.
If he wasn't Spencer Haas, you mean?
Yeah, if he wasn't Spencer Haas, I would forgive the KG stuff last year. But I watched him in that playoff series, and it was funny, like, Michael Levine of Liberty Ballers and I was cracking up at me, because I was literally like before the play would start on Twitter, I'd be like, Haas, they're going to run the pick and pop with Kevin Garnett at 17 from the extended elbow. Don't come back. Like, don't play off. Don't play the role. Yeah. You need to play up on KG. And then he would inevitably play off and get lost, and KG would hit the shot. And he did it to him like 19 times in the closing minutes of these games. And like every single time I'm screaming at him. Like, I'm sitting on my couch screaming at Spencer Haas, go cover KG! Yeah. What are you doing?
It's the single game samples, and Haas has actually done that quite a bit throughout his career, so you can highlight that game, but, you know, there's plenty of evidence to back up him doing that kind of stuff. But it's the single game, like, oh, Vucevic had 29 rebounds in a game. Haas would never do that. Right, Haas had a triple-double last year. What is it? Single games mean nothing. He broke Shaq's team record. Well, you know, Brandon Jennings broke Kareem Abdul-Jabbar's rookie scoring record. And now what? Like, single games just mean next to nothing. They're cool little moments, and they mean next to nothing. And I hate when they are the crux of an argument.
If he goes out and he has, like, five more 2029 games this year, then, yeah, we can start talking about how he's probably
exactly, yeah. Then I will say, you know what? He is clearly, clearly better than Spencer Haas in every way. But right now, I mean, you look at their numbers.
You weren't even saying that he was spectacularly bad. You were just saying that he wasn't better than Spencer Haas.
Yeah, I'm just saying, like,
you look. Which is actually a pretty low insult, though.
Yeah, it was kind of a subversive insult.
Well, you weren't even saying that he was worse. You were just saying he was equally as bad.
Yeah, like, it's their production across the board is different. They're different types of players, but they give you about the same production when you look at their advanced stats. You look at PR, you look at win shares per 48, like they are about the same. And that was my point. Like, they're about the same effectiveness. Now, it wouldn't shock me if Vucevic is well ahead of him next season or even later this season, but right now, they're about the same.
Orlando's lost six in a row, by the way.
Because they suck. Because they're terrible, and this is how they're supposed to be.
And they're hurt. They're hurt, too.
Yeah, yeah. No, that's the... I mean, otherwise, they'd be, you know, top of the East. I do really like... I love Jacques Vaughn, though. I love the coaching he's done already.
I like that, too. I guess this kind of speaks to Vucevic, though, because, like, I love the fact that he's basically... He's not forsaking the rookies. Like, he's getting them to play competitively.
Yeah. And
that's much harder to do.
I am a little worried that, you know, Hedo's going to take Mo Harkless's minutes, and I get that. But I like seeing Harkless out there kind of, you know, baptism by fire. Like, it's really a lot of trial and error stuff, and he's got a lot of error out there, but I think it's going to be so good for him down the road. And it kind of sucks that Hedo's back, and it's going to eat away at those minutes. By the way, Hedo Turkoglu...
I have so many problems with the Sixers because, like, I don't know how to judge Collins right now.
Yeah.
I really don't know how to judge him because, like, he's not playing... Like, Moultrie's played 61 minutes this season.
Yeah.
You know? And, like, why is Moultrie not getting more minutes? You know? And, like, why does he always rely on all of these veterans when... You know, and that's... He wants to win now, and his team is geared to win now, but I'm also kind of like... Play the guys that are gonna be good. They're, you know, that at least can. I don't know.
Here's the thing about that. I actually thought about bringing this up when we were talking about Stan Van Gundy, and this fits in. There was a Grantland Network podcast back in September with Dan Le Batard talking to Jeff and Stan Van Gundy, and it's a really candid discussion. I mean, they really get into like the Dwight Howard throwing, you know, telling that whole press conference thing of Dwight walking over to Stan after he's, you know, when he's sipping the Diet Pepsi and he's just told reporters that Dwight tried to get him fired, and then Dwight, you know, kind of denies it and that whole situation. And they get into stuff like, you know, fans and pundits wonder, why isn't this guy playing? And it's simply, you know, they talked about how it's simply, he's just not good enough right now. And you look at Moultrie, and I think Philadelphia is too good of a team to where you waste minutes is the wrong term, but that's the best way I can say it right now, is where you waste minutes on Moultrie trying to get him up to speed. I just don't think they have that luxury because they really can't afford to miss the playoffs, even without Bynum. Like, they cannot afford to miss the playoffs, and I think that's the reason guys like that don't play right away, and it's why rookies get such... you know, horrible playing time, such inconsistent playing time when they're not head and shoulders above their competition at the position. It's because they're just not ready to play. You know, they might be okay if you play them extended minutes, but for the most part, they're just not there.
By the way, Spencer Hawes is the third best PER on the Sixers, so.
Jesus.
I mentioned they're not a very good offensive team.
I've seen better.
Let's talk tonight real quick.
Yeah, I wanted to, before we got into tonight, Amari came back. He sucked. It's expected. He'll get better.
Will he? I don't know. I mean,
he'll get better than he was last night. I don't know that he fits in, but he'll get better. Good enough? I don't know. But he was just coming back from a knee injury after that much time off. If he had been good, it would have, you know, you would be testing him for PEDs.
If you can insure the contract, I wonder if you could actually move him.
I think you could. If you can insure it, absolutely.
If he can put together 2 months of solid play, I think they can move him too.
Yeah, I mean, he's 2 months of solid play or, you know, insurance fraud away from being moved to a new situation.
Right.
And I really think James Dolan could figure out the insurance fraud. That, why do you think Isaiah's still on the payroll?
Ba-dum-bum, ba-dum-bum. Jazz are given 3 at home to your Timberwolves.
I don't feel good about anything with the Timberwolves right now. And I know they're a good team, but they have not been good on the road this year. And they are just so bad shooting the basketball. It's weird how...
You're on one of your masochistic watching them.
Yeah, I just caught up and I've charted what I needed to chart. And it'll probably be out sometime tonight, maybe right before the Jazz Timberwolves game. It's so bad. They take bad shots. They don't make any of the good shots. It's weird. I mean,
who's the biggest offender?
I mean, Kevin Love's been horrible, horrible shooting the ball. And I think, you know, his conditioning's been bad. His hand wasn't right.
He broke his hand.
Yeah. Oh, no, it's understandable. But he's not making good decisions shooting the ball from outside. And that's the thing. And it's weird. Since Rubio's come back, and this isn't just with Rubio on the court, just that Dallas game through, they are shooting 26.9% on open three-point attempts.
No!
26.9. They are 7 of 26 since he's come back against Dallas.
That sounds bad.
That's really bad. Here's the thing is I'm too lazy to actually chart this for every team, so I don't know what league average is, but I know the fact that for the season, they are 35.4% on open threes. I know that's bad. Regardless of what the average is, it could be a little bit higher, it could be whatever. That sounds bad to me.
Can they do anything about it? Are they going to work through it?
I mean, they'll have to. By the end of the season, I think it can be fixed. Like, Love should be fine. Rubio should be healthy enough to where he is effective on the court, moving the ball around. Chase Budinger should be back and relatively healthy by the end of the season. You know, there are pieces that you can add that are just on the roster who are unhealthy right now, who can help fix it. But the best 3-point shooter on the team this year is Derek Williams.
No.
Yes.
Oh man.
Yeah. Oh. That's how bad it is. He's their best. I mean, Shved's been pretty good, but he's still only 33% on the season. But Derek Williams leading the team at 37.8%.
That does not sound like a recipe for success.
No, I mean they are literally the worst 3-point shooting team of all time right now. No team has ever taken this many attempts per game and shot under 30%. Not even the Bobcats of last year. They were slightly over 30%. Wolves are at 29.
Well, now I want to root for them to continue. This could be amazing.
It is almost to the point where I'm like, hey, if we're going to be bad at something, let's not finish the year at 31%. Like, let's get historically bad with it.
I'd probably take Utah just because they're good at home.
Yeah, I think Utah wins this game.
But they've been that team's been shaky too.
Derek Favors today said, Kevin Love is just like any other stretch four. He's probably a better rebounder than most stretch fours, but he's just another stretch four.
I'm looking forward to the Derek Favors era because I don't think really anybody understands like
this guy's Bynum 2.0. Like just in terms of personality with the media.
Yeah. He's getting the minutes and they're it's funny because like he's finally getting minutes and they're starting to struggle and everyone's continuing to blame it on Millsap. I don't really understand it, but whatever. So
Grizzlies Celtics.
This is one I don't like only because like I recognize that this is a game Memphis almost has to lose to punish me for my sins of trolling the Celtics. Like Memphis has to pay for my sins tonight, and I'm really sorry to Grizzlies Nation for that. Grizzlies are giving 3.5 on the road. Memphis can't hit right now. They just can't shoot. They're getting okay looks. They're just not knocking them down. Same problems with offense as usual.
Yeah.
Memphis fans want to run every single possession through Zach Randolph and make sure that he's dead by the time that March comes around.
That's we've talked about this with Durant before where he doesn't want to take 40 shots a game. He wants, good looks and efficient shots. And it sounds like a good idea to run your offense through one guy all the time, but you just can't do that. You can it will just wear the guys out.
And the idea is that if he's taking it, that means Rudy Gay's not, because Rudy Gay's really killing Grizzlies fans right now.
Yeah.
The thing, I said this yesterday, I've seen teams that don't have a wing creator, that don't have a threat on the outside of Conley's a spot up shooter and a good point guard and a game manager, but he's not gonna take you isolation. Spin the post, draw two defenders, and either make a kick-out pass or hit a tough shot. He's just not going to do that.
Right.
And I've seen teams without that, and they really struggle. They really, really struggle. I mean, don't get me wrong. If the Sixers wanted Rudy Gay for Thaddeus Young and Arnett Moultrie, then I would definitely I'd make that move. and move that Young back to three where he likes to play. But I just, it's going to be really hard to find a perimeter guy who can create his own shot who's not a huge downgrade from Gay. That doesn't really kill you. I mean, I mentioned yesterday, Paul George is one of the few guys that I would definitely take on a deal, but other than that, no. So, I mean, I don't know. I'll probably take the Celtics tonight just because eventually this team's going to have, like, the Celtics have to have, like, a right-the-ship game.
Yeah.
And they're coming off their horrific road trip.
And they're still a pretty decent to good team at home.
Yeah. And Avery Bradley's coming back, so, of course, they'll, he'll score 50 and, block 17 shots. And
it would be pretty awesome if the Grizzlies just continue this trend of not making good shots. And it's the night Bradley comes back and the Grizzlies are just terrible on offense and it's going to be, see, Avery Bradley has fixed the Celtics.
Oh, I can definitely see that coming.
Let me run this trade by you real quick. Derek Williams and J.J. Barea for Rudy Gay. Who says no?
Okay. Hold on, I need to find a bucket to draw myself in my
own. I'm just going to throw that out there and you think about that for a little while.
I'll tell you what, though. I would take Budinger, Williams, and Barea.
You lay your hands off of him. He's the only shooter they've got.
Rudy can shoot. He took a contested pull-up three yesterday.
Oh, that's fantastic. He's Alexei Shved then at the end of the game.
But he's willing to take that shot, and that deserves some credit.
The big matchup of the night, the rematch of the 2011 finals, Mavs at Heat. That's the one we've all been waiting for.
So Clippers-Warriors. The Heat are giving 10.5 to the Mavericks. That's where this has come to.
God.
Rick Carlisle's implementing a dress code.
Yeah, 1-0 in the dress code era.
What is happening? Why is Rick Carlisle dress code? How is this going to help them?
I kind of like it. I think it's just a reminder that you have to do your job. You have to treat it as a job. He seemed pretty furious in a press conference yesterday or the day before, where he said he's, several times he had to yell at guys in practice. And I think it's just a get back to basics kind of thing.
Is it Mayo? Do you think he's yelling at Mayo? Is it?
Yeah, I just assume he's yelling at Darren Collison because he's the Mario Chalmers of that team.
Collison is one of those where I've had players like this throughout my time covering the league where every time I watch him, a certain result happens, and so I can never. It just so happens that when I watch him,
yeah.
I'm trying to think who it was. There's a couple of guys that basically I would watch them and they would be terrible, and everybody would be like, "No, he's really good." And I'd be like, "Every time I watch him, he's awful. What am I missing?" And Collison's the opposite. Where every time I watch him, I'm like, "He's really good." Like, why are you guys so mad at Darren Collison?
Oh, I'm still convinced that Allen Houston never missed a shot in the NBA. I swear, every time I saw him take a shot, it was good.
David West liked that for me too.
Yeah. Clippers Warriors tonight. I kind of like the Warriors in this.
They're getting 1.5. They're underdogs at home. Clippers on back to back roadie.
The weird thing, this doesn't mean anything, but I looked at their schedule. They've never won one, lost one, or lost one, won one, and then gone. I mean, they've done everything in at least two game streaks this year. So it makes me think that the Warriors have to win. That's just science.
let's see where the matchups tonight. David Lee covering Blake Griffin is a nightmare, so that's not going to be good.
Yes.
Karl Landry covering DeAndre Jordan, that's going to be bad.
But I actually like Festus Ezeli against DeAndre Jordan because I like really physical guys guarding someone like that. I think, yeah. I think you don't play him a lot, but in those minutes, he'll really make Jordan work.
Jared Jack's a big equalizer here.
Oh, he's so good.
The Clippers have 1,700 veteran wings, none of whom can guard Klay Thompson.
But sometimes Klay Thompson guards Klay Thompson.
George Karl said that Chris Paul should be a DPOY candidate.
Huh.
Do you agree? He says that what he does in pressuring the ball and forcing your offense to get out of whack that it gets confused sometimes as not being spectacular, but in reality, he's very, very, very good.
This is why I love point guard defense. This is why I'm a big proponent of how important it is. I don't know that I agree with George Karl, but I agree with the theory.
Sounds like pretty much everything George Karl ever says with most people.
Yeah.
I don't necessarily agree with what George Karl said, but I like the idea.
Right, exactly. Jared Jack, sixth man of the year. Am I missing someone here?
A couple guys. Let's see. Baseline awards, I had...
I mean, Crawford's up there, but I think Jarrett Jack's overtaken him.
I've got Crawford number one still, man. I just, you know, he's had a bad couple. Here's kind of how the baseline awards work is you have to do so much to overcome a bad week.
Yeah.
Like, I tried really hard not to overreact. It's got to be a cumulative thing. So Crawford's still coasting on his first 6 weeks of play.
Okay. Yeah, I get that. I still think I would put Jack slightly ahead of him right now, but...
I've got Jack behind Carl Landry based off of numbers, but I probably need to switch that next week.
Yeah. Landry's been really good. It's weird that all of the six-man candidates have just come from the Clippers and Warriors.
Kevin Martin.
Yeah, he's up there.
I mean, he's not getting hurt. He's not hurting them defensively, and he's shooting the lights out still.
And wait till Lamar Odom makes a surge.
Yeah, my on baseline awards, it was, did you just say that? That's the name of the podcast. Did you just say that?
That'll be a fun one to explain.
Jamal Crawford, Kevin Martin, Carl Landry, Jarrett Jack, Ray Allen are my top five for six man.
Yeah, that's hard. I kind of want Eric Bledsoe in there, but I don't know that he plays enough to really warrant it.
He doesn't, and I'm still like, you know, he plays a lot in garbage time.
Yeah, that's true.
Like, I have a hard time giving six man to a guy that doesn't get minutes when his team has. I mean, he plays a lot of crunch time stuff, but he's playing crunch time with CP3.
Yeah.
It's like the roles are different, you know?
Yeah, that's true.
You know, so that's kind of my thing. I've got DPOY is getting hard for me. There's a lot of good candidates this year.
Yeah, I'm trying to think who I would have as number one.
It's Serenji and every, like, just looking at all of the data, it's Tony Allen.
Yeah, he probably is.
Because Allen, for a long time, I haven't checked it recently, but for a long time, Allen was literally number one in the possession allowed via Serenji.
Yeah.
And when you combine that, factoring who he guards, that's insane.
That is pretty nuts.
That's crazy.
Yeah, he's got to be up there. And
I've got Nick Collison number two. I love Nick Collison defense this year.
I don't know that I would put it. I think you had Kirilenko fourth recently, correct?
Yeah.
I think he's a top three for me because, like, there's no reason for that defense to be good, and they're the sixth best, and a lot of that is him.
I'm having a hard time because, like, I don't feel like I can keep Tyson Chandler out. I've got basically – I probably need to bump Collison because it's like Allen's got to be there, Chandler's got to be there, Kirilenko's got to be there. I put Lou Alding there because I feel weird not having a bull on there.
Yeah.
I really like what I've seen from Deng lately. But also, I don't really understand why I don't have Andre Iguodala on there either.
Question. Iguodala,
a monster.
Could Kevin Garnett win the award with his team being mediocre on defense? Because the splits are just ridiculous.
The numbers are really good, and I'm not... Everyone that knows us know our little debate over KG.
Yeah.
And it's not that I don't disparage it. He is phenomenal. He's really good. He definitely deserves to be in the top 10 category. Some of their problems at the rim are just because he's not physically able to get there. The intent is there. He's just I've watched him kind of labor a little bit, and he gets really. And I feel bad for him because I see like he's mad at himself, like he gets frustrated with himself about not being able to get there.
Yeah,
it's rare, and his rotations are still really good. Again, he's still elite. I just don't know if I can give him the award. If they can, I don't know though. I'll watch some more and take a look at it. It's worth taking another look at.
Yeah, I mean it's weird to think that.
I'm also looking for that because I want to understand why they're so bad at the rim.
Yeah.
So, like, I'm probably targeting the situations where that happens.
Right. That's fair. I just like making you say nice things about KG. That's really the whole point of this podcast.
we've gone over today.
Yeah, this is an hour.
It's been a busy day for me and my throat.
So. Yeah. Why don't you go get some rest? I'm going to cut this up.
Okay. Well, thanks, everybody.
And I will talk to you tomorrow.